Welcome to the show, Juggy, and thanks for coming on. I know we were supposed to meet up personally a few months ago, but with COVID and everything that happened, here we are. So thank you for your time.
I appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to this.
But Juggy, you just celebrated your anniversary, is that right?
Yeah. Oh. 8 years. Literally just flown by. I couldn't believe it. But we just had a bit of a time off. A bit of time away. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to spend some quality time with Jesse.
Yeah.
Obviously with like COVID and everything, it's just been the two of us with the kids. So we've not really had much kind of respite or time together. So it was really, really nice to just get away for a few days.
Mm. Good, good. I'm glad you had that, Juggy, because I know how hard you work and I know how much I call it business, but it doesn't feel like a business to you, does it? It just feels like your life's work, really. I know how much dedication you put into that and how much energy you put into that. So for you to say, I'm actually glad you took a break.
You know what? You're not the only one that said that. Some of my clients were actually messaging me. And you know, like you just said that, even clients isn't a good word for it. Because I feel like you guys are all family.
Mm.
So as soon as we start a journey like this, it's like we're all part of one family. And I got a few messages on the weekend because I was replying back to people. And they were like, no, don't. I only messaged you hoping you'd pick this up on Monday. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll take your advice. I'll take my own advice and just take a bit of time off.
Yeah.
Eventually, I turned the phone off. So it's
good.
It was good. No, you're right. Because this is my purpose in life. And because every single person that we support and we help, it's more than just a body transformation. It's more than just a physical transformation. I see you all grow and develop and progress on a personal level. And yeah, it's not business for me, it's purpose.
Yeah, and I think this is what really attracted me towards your team of trainers and coaches, because you know, we go through phases in our life where we want to lose weight and we try all the different diets, we starve ourselves, we do the stupidest of things, but really we need to take a step back from all of that and actually ask ourselves, why do we want our bodies to look this way? And what kind of impact do we want that to have on the rest of our life? Because everything we do seems to be so short-lived. And I think that's the life we live now, unfortunately, where everything is just grab and go. And we're looking for the immediate sort of satisfaction. And what you do is so much more than that, is so much beyond that. And this is why, I love talking to you and I love working with your team. But Juggy, before we get into what you do now, I want to ask you about your personal fitness journey. How did it start and what prompted you to get into bodybuilding?
Yeah, you know what? So this was a funny one. So the reason I started kind of weight training in the first place was when I was about 14, I was trying to play for an adults football team. And I was going training every week and, you know, we were playing football and I was playing against all these adults that were like maybe 10 years my senior. And I'm obviously a lot more physically developed than I was at the age of 14. And I heard the coach once say, oh, he's not ready yet. Like, he's not physically ready yet. So I spent the whole of that year just going home with some dumbbells that my dad had picked up from Argos, doing press-ups, doing sit-ups, lifting those weights. And by the time I was 15, I went back and I was trying out for the summer. And I played against the manager, I played against the coach, and he was like, yeah, he's ready now. And that was just like the beginning of the process. But then, I mean, I had this strong affinity to learn more about nutrition. So I went to university and I studied performance nutrition. And I realized that weight training gave me this massive confidence that I just didn't have otherwise. I just didn't seem to be able to kind of tap into that confidence unless I looked and felt a certain way. And the only way I looked and felt a certain way was when I was training consistently. So I'd go and weight train every single day in the gym and I'd love it. I'd absolutely love pushing myself to the brink where my body was having to adapt and change. And there was something within that just gave me a sense of purpose around exercise. We talk a lot about kind of self-discovery and kind of personal reflection. And it was only in the last maybe 3 to 4 years that a lot of the reason that I got into nutrition in the first place, which is my actual passion, is because when I was about 10, 11 years old, my dad was told that he's got an autoimmune condition. It was caused through stress and caused through obviously working exceptionally long hours, lots of high stress from work, trying to give us the opportunities that he would never have had growing up. And I think that was also a massive push to why I became so, I guess, obsessed in a good way about the impact that nutrition can have on us and how much it can actually impact our health in general. So there's so many different reasons to kind of like why I got into it in the first place. But I think bodybuilding gave me that confidence that I otherwise wouldn't have had. And one of the things that I noticed was, and sorry, I know that I'm going off on a tangent here, but one of the things that I noticed with bodybuilding is it did give me that confidence and it gave me the ability to have like control over myself, control over my physique, control over the way I wanted to look, the way I wanted to feel. But unfortunately, at one point, that actually became a negative because my whole identity became wrapped up in my ability to have abs or my ability to have 18 or 19 inch arms or look a certain way and, you know, dominate a room when I walked into it. And it went both ways, realistically. It just completely, it took over my life.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question, Juggy, because I think a lot of us have been through this phase where we lose weight and then we do really well and we look a certain way, but then it becomes unhealthy after a certain point where you become obsessed with your image. My brother and I were raised in Gibraltar, and we had access to good weather, which really helped us a lot in the sense that we could go out and run, we could go out and play football, and it was fine. Like, we didn't have to think about the weather. So playing sports and doing exercise for us was quite easy, really. There was a point where my brother and I became obsessed with losing weight because we started running and we started training for a marathon, and we realized that actually running is a great way to lose weight. Then we lost weight, and then we became obsessed. We started weighing ourselves every day. We started to even weigh our rotis that our mom used to make. And we got to a point where we didn't even enjoy it anymore. But you get to that point where you're like, actually, I've reached what I wanted to reach, but what next? So it becomes like an obsession. I looked quite unhealthy at a certain stage, and so did my brother. But how did you sort of snap out of that? Because there has to be someone to tell you that, right? Like, Juggy is getting a bit over the top now.
This is the thing, though. I think what I noticed within myself is I had become so obsessed with the way that I looked and so obsessed with the way that that look made me feel. I was no longer doing it because I wanted to feel happy. I was doing it because I thought that that's the way that I should live, or I was doing it to meet the expectations of others. So if somebody was going to come and meet me, I would want them to come and meet me and be like, wow, look at you. You look, you know, physically incredible. Like, you look so, so amazing. And don't get me wrong, bodybuilding was such a huge part of my life, and it gave me so much experience and it gave me invaluable education that you just wouldn't have picked up otherwise. Like, you don't know your body that well until you do something like that, until you actually go through some form of extreme. And it enabled me to realize just how powerful my mind could be, like how powerful and how strong. And if I had a goal and I'd have the ability to have the resolve to see it through, like, that's what bodybuilding gave me. What happened on the flip side of it is I lost my identity in it, and I started to have negative self-talk, negative beliefs about my capability of delivering coaching unless I looked a certain way. And I remember sitting there on the sofa one day at home, and Jacob had just been born. He's about 1 year old at the time. And he's my eldest son, so he's just turned 5 this year. And I remember sitting there crying. And I didn't know why I was crying, but I was just upset. I was really, like, deeply upset, and I didn't know where this emotion was coming from. And it must have been on the back of another week of double sessions, AM cardio, PM training, sometimes triple sessions where I'd have to do some more cardio before bed. And I was just physically and emotionally, just mentally exhausted. And I could feel it all piling up. And as I sat there crying, I was like, what's happening to me? And it wasn't necessarily that somebody had to come and tell me that this is, it's gone too far now. I think it was within me that I felt the pain, and then it was up to me to pursue why I was feeling the pain, like where it was stemming from. And when I realized at that point that I'd almost gone so far away from why I started this journey in the first place, that it made me realize I need to do something about it. I started this journey to help our community improve their health, to change their mindset towards themselves, to build confidence, to build happiness. And there I was sitting on the sofa crying because I had completely lost my way. And I was either going to go down this unhealthy path and just continue down it, or I was going to take dramatic action. And that was the point where I was like, something's got to change.
Mm. And Jaggi, what you've created is... is it specifically marketed? Again, I'm using very business terms, but I don't like to because I know it's what you as you said, it is your purpose. But why specifically South Asians? Because, we can all find a coach online. We can all find someone to help us. But one of the other reasons I spoke to you personally was because you aim your coaching and you tailor it for South Asian communities. What did you see that was lacking so much in our community, and not even our community, but even our culture? Because weight loss is not something we really talk about, and mental health is not something we talk about. So at what point did you see this gap?
You know what? So again, I could probably go off a number of tangents here, but one of the biggest things that I noticed early on was... And am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
You are. That's okay.
So if you type in diets online, the first thing that comes up is all of these kind of diet-based foods and dietary approaches and all of these thought processes around nutrition that are not talking to me as an Indian guy that's been raised eating Indian food. It's not telling me how I can adapt my current lifestyle, adapt my culture, adapt my social responsibilities. None of it's talking to me. And that's what I used to do. I used to go online and do my own research and Google things and search things out. And I would be trying all these things that basically said, you can't eat carbs, you can't eat the foods that you like eating. And in fact, when I went to see my first coach, so when I hired a personal trainer myself, he said, you can't eat that shit. So I told him about my diet.
Was he a white guy?
Yeah, exactly. You can't. When I first started doing this, there were no Indian coaches. There was nobody else doing this. Like, this isn't a career that a lot of people go down because it's not being a doctor, it's not being a dentist, it's not being a lawyer, right? So for me to be a personal trainer, and I started this journey 11 years ago. And I don't think people realize that I've been doing this for 11 years now. So there's a lot of education that's gone into that, a lot of experience. But when I first started it, in fact, even looking back at my bodybuilding, I was one of the first Indians to represent our kind of culture on stage.
Yeah.
There was no Indians doing it back then. And even to the point where I represented the UK and I competed nationally and internationally as a bodybuilder, as an Indian bodybuilder, and it just wasn't seen back then. So when I went to this trainer, he said, look, you can't eat that shit. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you can't eat Indian food. You can't eat it with all that flavor and sauce and all that sort of stuff. He didn't know what was going into that. Now I can say to somebody confidently, yeah, it's based on, tomato maybe and a bit of herbs and spices. Like, of course you can eat that if you understand what's going into it. But back in the day, nobody was really talking to me as an Indian person or as an Indian guy. So that was one of the biggest things that made me realize, hold on, we need to change our approach. People need to have a resource or somewhere to go to learn about this sort of stuff, which is why I just started sharing all this information online. So my social media, if you go onto my Instagram and you followed all the information that I put on there, you'd be able to transform yourself. Of course, you'd have to take the time to then create the strategy and put it together.
Mm.
And that's what people lack. Lack time to do that, which is why they come and work with us one-to-one.
Yeah.
But also because there is an element of needing support, needing coaching to be held accountable, to be given the option to actually go and see our psychologist, for example. Like, that sort of stuff isn't something I can just give away online. And I think the other thing that you mentioned there is, especially our community and our culture, and I still see this today, is that there's so many of us that have got this mindset that we have to be perfect. Like, we don't celebrate success unless it was absolute perfection. So we don't celebrate a day where we maybe did three things that were amazingly well, went amazingly well. We focus on the two things that didn't.
Mm.
Like, that's the way we're geared to think. If I remember, and this is a good thing, but it's also something that's potentially damaging, right? I remember going through school, and the only time I would ever tell my parents that I did, you know, I had a test, is if I got an A, or if I got 10 out of 10. If I got 8 out of 10, I just wouldn't tell anyone.
Mm.
Like, if I got a B or a B plus, I just wouldn't tell anyone. You know, and this is the kind of mindset that we kind of build from a very early age.
Mm.
So then, we get to a point where we're almost fearful of communicating, fearful of sharing what we're actually thinking, because there's that thought process that because it wasn't perfect, because it wasn't amazing, it's not worth celebrating. And that in itself is quite a damaging thing. And that's something, as I started coaching people, I started to see more and more frequently, people weren't telling me about what had gone badly. People were only telling me what they thought I wanted to hear. And how can I support you if you're not telling me what you're struggling with? So that was another thing, like just looking at the people that I was working with at the time and seeing what the actual holes were in their approach, why some people were exceptionally successful in what they were looking to achieve and why some people weren't. And that's why I started to develop the community around it as well. So you're part of the community, right? So you see people share their wins, and you started to see people be more comfortable in sharing where they need some more support. And maybe this is, I love celebrating success, right? But I equally love celebrating people communicating when they're struggling, because then I can help.
Mm.
And if you don't share that, who can help anyone?
But Juggy, you know, what you just spoke about is, not everyone sort of has that train of thought, if you know what I mean. We seem to live in a society and live in a generation where it's very easy to dwell and distract. So if we are upset with something, if we're not honest with ourselves, we'll just turn Netflix on, turn YouTube on, and just try to forget about it, move on to the next day. And it was something I posted this morning as well, that you really have to dig deep if you really want to create a change, because if you're just going to sit and dwell, you're not really changing anything, because the next day the same thing is going to happen. So my question to you is, you seem to have gone through a very big transformation, not just physically, but mentally as well. Did it work hand in hand, or did you have to try and figure out a way to focus on the mental side and then on the physical side? And Juggy, I really want to ask you, like, what were your breaking points? What were the really shit times where you hit rock bottom? I mean, you mentioned one where Jacob was 1 year old and you sat on the couch and, you know, you were in tears. But have you had any other moments like that where you've had these breakthroughs?
Oh, absolutely. You know, my kind of journey of, like, self-discovery began when I was about 21, 22, when I was going through the depths of like really deep depression and anxiety, and you know, that was clinically diagnosed. It wasn't one of those I had a bad day or a bad week.
So did you speak to your family about this, or was this something you went through by yourself?
This is the thing, like, my family saw it firsthand. Like, so I actually gone to university at that point, and this is really funny, right? Well, it's not funny at all, but I went to university. And I lived away from home at university, and my upbringing had been one of, I was fairly sheltered, but I didn't play outside with my friends until I was about 17, and we'd go and play football. I didn't go outside. I didn't know what went on outside the four walls. We didn't really kind of like celebrate, I didn't socialize a lot. So when I went to university, it was like, whoa, what is this? This is intense, this is insane, there's so many opportunities, we can go out drinking every night, there's clubbing, there's, like, you know, communication with girls and all that sort of stuff, and it was almost like overwhelming. And then in the same kind of time, my Baba passed away, me and my Baba were exceptionally close. And like, this is, it was very out of the blue. Like, just the week before, I'd been at his house cutting down the branches off trees so that he could get better reception with his Sky TV. And then even on the day that he passed away, before he went to hospital, he was actually mowing the lawn. So it was kind of completely and utterly out of the blue for us. And that just completely and utterly devastated me. And it led me down a path of not knowing how to deal with it, like drinking more, trying to distract myself, going out more, clubbing more. And honestly, I was at the point where I was just completely in a state of disrepair. My mom saw this firsthand, and she sent me to psychologists, psychiatrists, anyone that she could find, she sent me to.
So, Jaggi, sorry to interrupt, but what were the actual symptoms of this depression? So you mentioned drinking and you know, going out more, but what else did you go through? And I'm sorry if I'm going a bit too deep here, Jaggi, but I think it's important that people actually see the side of you as well. And maybe someone is going through this and then they will realize, actually, I might need help. Because it's something we need to really talk about. So apart from the drinking, what else were your symptoms of this depression?
I completely closed up as a person. So I didn't express a single emotion. I was going through so much pain internally, but I just did not express myself. My brother came home one day and he said, "I don't know who you are anymore." Like, me and my brother, we're 3 years apart, so he's always been someone that I've grown up with, been very, very close with. Just the stupid things, like when we were growing up, we'd always choose each other on the same football teams before anyone else. Like, we were really close, right? And as soon as I went to university, it was like, you know, you're different and I can't put my finger on it. And inside, I wanted to say, like, I'm really struggling. I'm crying a bit now because it's really impacting.
Yeah, I can see it in your eyes, Jaggi. I'm sorry, bringing this out.
I never get the chance to talk about this sort of stuff. And honestly, it's one of the toughest things, but people do need to hear this because there's a lot of people going through this and they don't know how to handle it. They don't know where to turn and they don't know what to do. And I'm blessed that I had so many people around me that actually cared. But yeah, at the time, so my brother said that to me and that impacted me so much. I wanted to like scream out and say, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm struggling with. But instead, I probably said something arrogant and cocky and just brushed it under the carpet as though it didn't impact me, but it did. And it still does to this day. And the whole time, I was pushing people that wanted to be close to me as far away from me as possible. I'd have just insane turns of anger. Like, I'd be so horrible to people, and then I'd regret it, which would then create that whole feedback loop of just feeling worse and worse and worse about myself, to make myself even feel completely worthless. And my whole self-esteem was completely gone. No confidence, didn't know how to talk to people, didn't know how to build relationships. And that's why I was so, like, I pushed towards going out so often and drinking so much, because that would be a time where I could be free from all the pain and almost be myself, but obviously be fueled by alcohol so I can make more friends. And the friends that I was making at the time were only around me because I was the one going to the bar and buying all the rounds. Like, they weren't real friends. They didn't really care about me after a night out. Mm. We weren't messaging after we'd seen each other on the night out. So there was so much going on at that time. And even at university, I was really struggling to make the grades. I was really struggling to get the work done. I'd be leaving things right to the very last minute. But at university, I think they just thought, oh, maybe he's just a bad student. And I wasn't a bad student. I loved going to there and learning about nutrition. It was something that drove me. It's such a passion of mine. But it was almost like, oh, he's just a bad student. So nobody ever kind of really picked up on it there. And I actually think that's a flaw. I think people need to be more aware of this in the education system. I could have been much better and I could have excelled at university had I had somebody kind of pick up on the fact that I was going through depression and anxiety and struggling to make the transition to actually living at home and then moving away from home for the first time. But I kind of digress a little bit there. So my mom, she really picked up on this very early on. She was trying to push me towards all these different kind of experts. But for me, as a 20-year-old lad, there's nobody talking about depression back then. You've got to think about this. This is like 10, 11 years ago, right? Nobody was on social media saying, oh, yeah, I've suffered from depression. There was no Asian actors out there talking about it. It wasn't in the public domain. And in fact, when a psychiatrist actually said to me, I think you might be going through depression, I kind of just stormed out of the room. I did not want I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it. And I didn't want to be labelled with something. So I stormed out of the room. And just thinking about that back then, I wasn't in a position to accept help. And it was only when things got really bad, like really, really bad, where there was an element of self-harm involved. And again, I've not spoken about this because I don't like people thinking, oh, he's saying this because he wants us to feel sorry for him in some sort of way.
No, no. Well, if I have those listeners, then choose the next podcast. I'm sorry. But Jackie, you mentioned self-harm. Did it ever get to a point where you picked something up and attempted something, or was it just thinking of harming yourself?
No, it became a physical act and quite an aggressive one. And yeah, that was the kind of turning point for me where I was like, yeah, maybe it's not right. Maybe I've got depression. Maybe there is something going on here, and I need to go and tackle it, and I need to go and handle it.
So, Jackie, may I ask again? You know, going back to the self-harm bit, what did you feel at that time you would achieve, or what did you feel at that time self-harming would do? Because I've never spoken about this either, but you know what? We're having this conversation, so let's talk about it. I was at university going through something very similar as yourself, and I feel scared to talk about it because I've got Radhika in my arms right now as I speak to you. But if I want her to grow up as someone who's honest, and someone who's going to empower others, then I think it's only the right thing for me to do now. So you're talking about it, so let's have this conversation. I was at university going through another shit time as well. There were some issues going on in our family. I hadn't spoken to my parents in months. People cut me off. I remember spending my birthday alone. I had nobody around me. And remember, Jaggi, I was in Czech Republic. So I was in the middle of like nowhere. Different language, a whole different place altogether. And at that time, we didn't have WhatsApp and all that. So it's not like I could just pick up the phone and call somebody. So I was by myself as well. And yes, I probably was clinically depressed. And yes, I did self-harm. And the reason I did that personally was because I felt that I deserved to be in pain. I felt that hurting myself was a punishment to me for being such a shit person. I said to myself, well, if I hurt myself, this is what I deserve. I don't deserve a hug. I don't deserve a smile. I deserve pain. And I'm going to inflict that pain on myself because that's the only thing I deserve in this life. And that's why I did it, Jaggi. But why did you do that? Was it something similar, or were you thinking of something else?
Yeah, I think I was looking for an escape. I wanted to get away from everything. I didn't want to be the person that caused so much pain for others. I didn't want to be that person that was making other people feel so badly about what I was doing and the person that I was becoming. And I just thought, there's no way back. And I thought that was the only option. I just wanted to get off this earth. And I honestly felt that everybody else around me would be better off without me.
Was it also a sort of act of desperation where maybe you couldn't explain yourself to other people, so maybe this was something where people would understand what you're going through?
I think it was
a call for help.
I think it was. I just no. I honestly thought at the point at that time, and the way that I did it, the way that I chose to self-harm was something again I've not spoken about. And I remember, so I lost my driving license because of this, because of the way that I chose to do this, right? And I remember all the all my friends at the time saying, oh, what's happened? And I was just like, oh, I got caught speeding and, you know, my license got taken off me and stuff like that. And someone was like, oh, I heard it was a car crash. And I was like, yeah, I had a car crash. And he was, yeah, my car spun out. And I remember one of my friends asking me, like, oh, why didn't you just get another car? And I was like, oh, I'm just scared of driving now because of what's happened. And it was all these lies and lies and lies and layers of lies that were building up around me because of what I'd done. And it wasn't necessarily that I was trying to escape or trying to, you know, have that call for help. I genuinely got to a point where I thought, I'm just a disappointment to everyone. Like, I'm a disappointment to everybody else, and I'm a disappointment to myself, and I don't deserve to be alive. Like, that was my whole thought process. That was my premise behind it. And I was thinking, all I'm ever going to do is cause people pain, and people don't understand me. Like, nobody will understand me. So what's the point? What's the point of being here anymore? And it was almost, I thought I was putting everybody else out of their misery by me putting myself out of my misery. And that was my, I guess, my driving force behind why I did what I did. But it was also one of the moments in my life where it completely turned things around for me. Because what I did, in the way that I did it, I walked away with some scratches on my hands. I've still got the scars on my hands to this day to what had happened. But nothing else. Like, nothing else. I'd driven my car over 100 miles an hour into bricks, essentially, and I walked away with nothing other than scratches on me. Didn't have a seatbelt on. I was driving a little Vauxhall Corsa at the time. It's not like the car was made of anything special, and the car itself was completely devastated. Like, when my dad saw it, because he came to pick me up, when my dad saw the car, he was just in tears. And I remember him coming home and just cuddling me and saying, I don't know what's going on, but I'd never want you to do that again. And I just, there was just this rush of emotion, and we just connected at that moment, and I realised how stupid I'd been and how many people actually loved me and how stupid I'd been, because I walked away from that car where I was meant to have completely ended my life with nothing but scratches on me. And something in me just said, you're meant for something more. You're meant for something more in this life.
Sorry, Dougie, I'm tearing up now.
I didn't think that me and you would talk at this level today, but I actually appreciate the fact we are, because I've not had this conversation with anybody else before.
Dougie, when you did this, what was going through your mind? Did you think of the consequences? Did you think about what your parents would feel after this had happened? Because when I was going through what I was going through, the only tiny thread I would hang on to was my parents have suffered a lot in their life. They've had to go through a lot to bring us to this stage. I mean, my dad comes from a village in Delhi. He didn't even have money to buy a pen to write, and he became a chartered accountant. You know, it was one of those stories. Came to Europe, he's educated his children. My brother's a pilot and an engineer. His daughter was on track to being a doctor. What kind of misery would I put them in if I did this to myself? That was the only thing that stopped me. Did that go through your mind as well when you put your foot on the pedal to accelerate? What were you thinking?
I think it, obviously there's the selfish element of just wanting to put myself out of misery. But at the same time, I was causing so much pain back home with my parents. Like, they didn't know how to handle me. I didn't know how to communicate with them. All I saw myself was as a burden to everyone else. I just saw myself as a huge burden to anybody that I came in contact with. And I just couldn't see a way past it. So I thought that would be the best way to just relieve everybody of me, relieve everybody of the pain that I was causing.
Were you training at this time as well? Were you doing your bodybuilding at this time?
I was, but not in a serious way. And one of the things that I would say, again, that bodybuilding gave me was the discipline afterwards, because I became more purpose-driven after that moment, after what I'd been through at that time. And as soon as I'd accepted that, hold on, I am in depression right now, I am anxious. You know what? There's so many things that lead into that as well, right? So one of the things for me is I'd always had this vision of myself for what I would be doing at a certain age, where I would be in my life, how successful I would be, what I'd have achieved, what I'd have accomplished. And I was nowhere near it. I was absolutely nowhere near what I thought I'd be doing at that point. And because of that, again, this whole feeling like an absolute failure, it just led me down this path that I couldn't see a route out of. And I'll give you an example of this. You know, I've talked about this a long time ago, but we almost have these kind of internal narratives of what success looks like. And for me, it was at the age of 21, obviously having a degree and starting my career. At the age of 24, I always said I'd be married. At the age of 26, I always said I'd have my kids. At the age of 30, I'd be living in a certain house, driving a certain car, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I always had this vision that that's what my life would be like, and that's what success looked like. And at the age of 21, I didn't have my degree at that point because I'd deferred a year, and I'd chosen to take a bit of time off to I just wanted to live at home again. I just didn't want to be in Nottingham. I didn't want to be away from home anymore. And I couldn't handle it. And because of that, there was almost this, oh, well, that's delayed my timeline. And because I'm not on my timeline, I'm not on track to be on this timeline anymore. And it created more devastation in my mind. Like, I'm an absolute failure. It's just, where did that come from? Nobody said that to me. Nobody said, Juggy, you need to be doing this at age 21. Nobody said that you need to be married at 24. That was just an internal drive. I think that was also a contributing factor to the way I was feeling at that time. Yeah, I feel like I've just kind of lost the thread of the conversation.
No, it's okay, Juggy. I mean,
completely taken over me.
It's okay. I think, you know, what you're saying is something that resonates with a lot of us. When I was at university, I had the same idea. You know, I'll finish, I'll get my degree, and then I'll get a job straight away. And actually, that didn't happen. I had missed a few exams, and then you just get into this self-loathing cycle of, oh, but why didn't this happen? Why didn't this happen? And sometimes you need someone to just, so you know, like, just pick you up and just take you out of that bubble and be like, listen, pal. Oh, sorry about that, Juggy. I'm not really sure what's happened to her. sometimes you need someone to just give you a bit of a wake-up call. And I feel like what you do with your coaching sort of encompasses all of that. What are you trying to achieve with your coaching, apart from sorry Juggy, 1 second, hold on, Juggy, I'll just put her down, just give me a second, sorry.
Oh,
Sorry about that, Jaggy. So Jaggy, we were talking about how you deferred and you went back home, and how your vision of life sort of changed a little bit. How did you get into starting your own, again, I don't like to call it a business, but your coaching, your online coaching? How did you go about all of that? Because what you've created is a community of people who have the same vision as yourself, and who are trying to sort of create a better life for themselves. And you're creating a legacy, Jaggy. That's what you're really doing. And I think it's really admirable. But obviously, it had to start somewhere. And I'm sure it wasn't easy. So how did all of this come about?
So this is the thing. After I went through, experienced what I'd experienced, I realized that there was something that was meant for my life, something that was more meaningful. And at the time, I thought to myself, well, what am I truly passionate about at that very moment? And one of those things was bodybuilding. One of those things was transforming my own physique.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was one area that, again, I had absolute control over. So I chose to go and pursue that. And on the back of it, it was so inspirational to so many other Indians who had almost been told that because of their genetics and because of their makeup, they would never be able to transform the way that I was. So that, I guess, gave me a bit of a platform to help other people that looked and felt similar to me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I just started one-to-one training with people. I went and got a personal training qualification, and I went and started personal training with people, helping them transform their physiques, understanding how to train, understanding nutrition, albeit with the same ethos that had been given to me that you can't eat Indian food at that time. And I was actually telling people, and you know, the same thing, that you can't eat Indian food, you've got to eat like this and, you know, train like this and be hardcore. And then obviously things evolved. And I guess one of the biggest things that helped me evolve from that was Jacob being born and realizing what other people were going through. You know, other fathers were going through at that time, new to being dads, trying to manage their career, trying to manage their business, their growth, their education, all these different things that were being thrown at them. And then that made me realize, hold on, I need to change my tact and change my approach. And that's when I stopped focusing so much on the 3 to 4 hours that people spend in a gym and the 165 hours outside of a gym, which is where we live our daily lives. And that's when I started switching towards how do we manage stress better? Because stress is a big driver to our decision making. How do we manage sleep better? How do we manage our awareness of nutrition better? Or how food makes us feel? Like, how do we think about that? And that's when I transitioned to this kind of online model, because I realized that I could deliver a lot more support in this fashion rather than just spending an hour with somebody in the gym. It wasn't going to transform their mindset towards what they needed to achieve. And I actually found that the hour in the gym was becoming quite limiting, because that kind of made people think, well, that's all I need to focus on.
Yeah.
And clearly you're in this process right now, so you know exactly that, you know that it's not about that hour in the gym, it's everything else you're doing outside of that as well, right?
Mm. And what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind, Jaggy? Because you've got 2 boys as well, and I remember when I first found you, I think it was in March of this year, it was on Women's Day, and you released a video, you know, to talk about how you felt women played a role in your life. And it was very humbling to watch. But you've got 2 boys now, and now we're living in a world of feminism, and I think there's a big social revolution going on right now, and a big generational change as well. And we talk about the change between our parents and ourselves, but what our kids will go through now is probably even bigger. What kind of values do you want to put in your 2 boys?
You know what, I was thinking about this earlier, and it's something that me and Jessie were talking about, Jessie being my wife, obviously.
Yeah.
We were talking about over the weekend, and it's funny, we haven't really come up with a strategy for this. But I guess it's just things that we're doing for ourselves right now that we hope to pass on. So there's something that I do every single morning, and it's reading, learning, training. Reading, learning, training. I say that all the time to Jacob. And I always make sure that he sees me doing these things. So he'll come downstairs, he'll see me reading a book. He'll come downstairs, he'll see me writing notes, learning something new. And he will see me exercising in the garden. To the point that recently, he came home from school and he said to Jesse, I'm going to go and do some exercise first, and then I'm going to go and play in the garden, and then I'm going to eat my food. So he was already kind of, in his own little way, putting those things out there. And the reason that I think that's so important is that I want him to see me giving back to myself first before I give back to everybody else. And in fact, one of the conversations that me and Jacob had was, after we do this, how do we then make other people happy? What can we do today to make other people happy? He's only 5 years old, so it's not going to be anything insane just yet. But he always says, I'm going to listen to mommy. I think this morning's one, it was, I'm going to listen to mommy, I'm going to get ready quickly, and I'm going to play with Caleb nicely, Caleb being his younger brother. So these are three things that for him that he's now going to give back to everybody else around him, and these are the important people around him. And then the other thing we do is, before we go to bed at night, after we've put the book away, so obviously we read whatever book he wants us to read, and we just talk about what made us happy today. Like, what were the things that made us happy? And within that, I also ask, like, what did you learn today? What was one thing that you learned? And that could be from school, could be from his play, could be from his little exploration. Like, his biggest thing right now is he likes to lift up rocks and see what insects are scurrying around underneath. And if he sees a caterpillar, he always calls it Steve, because that's his favourite name at the moment. But it's just funny. We talk about these things, and it's not necessarily right now that I'm thinking, how can we adapt to, you know, the changes in life externally, like the social, I guess, the kind of gender divide that we've seen in our generation, everything. I would rather just focus on how can we make sure that we're the best people that we can possibly be. And they're the values that I want to instill. Give back to yourself first, and then make sure you're giving that energy to the people that you love and you care about. And I think that's what we do. In my coaching as well, it's the same ethos. Give back to you first so you can be the best mother you can be, or be the best person that you can be at work, or for the people that you're serving, or you care about, or your family. And if we can pass on those values, then intrinsically, well, I guess, it's just going to happen for us. Like, we are just going to be good people, right?
Yeah.
And that's all I want to see.
I think that's something that that's very undervalued. Our energy. We're so focused on giving our energy towards other people that we forget to pour our own tank. And I think what you said is perfect, really, Juggy, because I feel kids and children always learn more through example rather than telling. I know my mom's told me so many things in my life, but now that I look back, I'm like, I never really listened to her when she told me off or when she said something. It's only through seeing her do certain things that I've picked it up. But Juggy, I want to ask you, Jacob and Caleb are not very traditional Punjabi or Hindu names. So is there any reason why you chose those names?
Yeah, well, I chose both of those names, Jacob and Caleb. I was running through names. You know how it is. You've got all these names. In fact, we had a list of names for when Jacob was born in our mind already. And then when I looked at him, I was just like, these names just don't suit you. And like, J has a certain meaning in our language. So it's like that oneness, that love. And I was like, J has to be in there somewhere. And then he was, I don't know, he was like my little cub, my little bear. And and Caleb, we didn't, you know, it got to the point where we were really panicking. Because it was coming, I think you've got like a certain amount of time.
You've got a time limit.
Yeah, we were like, honestly, I had so many names just listed out. I was like, they just don't suit him. And some of them were really traditional.
Yeah.
And just was like, it's going to be weird, you know, having Jacob and then having like a completely opposite, really traditional name. And then I don't know what it was, but Caleb just suited him. And there's not a lot, maybe there's not a lot of kind of meaning in our language behind that. But it just suited him, and I just loved it. And as soon as I said it, it just stuck.
Yeah. They are both very beautiful names. And I always, you know, when Radhika was born as well, Juggy, I'm not kidding, there was like every family member who never spoke to me, decided to put in their opinion, like, actually, you should call her this, and then call her that. I was like, hold on, we have a name, and this is what we're going to stick to. But how important is it for you to instill the Hindu culture or the Punjabi culture in your children? Because I feel like it's a very tricky time to be a parent, because my parents, at least, they moved from India to Europe, so they had to find a balance. But now for me, it's not so much about finding a balance, it's actually more of a fear that I lose it along the way. You know, because I was telling Nishant the other day that what I don't want is our values to be diluted over the generations. I don't want our culture to be diluted over the generations. I mean, that for me is something I just don't want. But at the same time, I want them to adapt to being westernized in some way, because if not, they're just not going to fit into school and they're going to find things very difficult. So how important is that for you?
Yeah, and this is, again, these are conversations that we've had not too long ago. And I think this is the thing with us. Jacob and Caleb spend a lot of time now with their grandparents,
mm-hmm.
so my mom and dad, and they are more traditional than myself and Jesse. Obviously, we grew up where we were basically told by my grandparents, speak English so that they could be better at speaking English. So it's almost like, for me, don't speak your language.
Yeah.
And it just completely, for me, it was like, okay, I'm just going to speak English all the time and get really, really good at that. And now it's like, well, how are the kids going to pick up the language? Mm. Like, where are they going to learn it from? So we're so used to speaking into our native tongue, which is actually English.
Yeah.
I was born here, I was raised here. So how do we actually get, you know, the boys speaking Punjabi? Like, now I get my mum and dad speak Punjabi to them constantly, like all the time. So then they're picking up words and coming out with phrases and talking again. So I think that's the only way that we can really do it. And one of the things that I asked for recently is, we actually got sent out some books that were teaching like basics of Punjabi, so that we can then pass that along to the kids, and they would be like the nighttime books that we'd read.
Mm.
And I think that was a really cool way of doing it too, and something they can enjoy.
Mm.
But yeah, it's tough. It is really, really tough. And I think the thing is, with us, we're so busy. Like, we're so busy with just almost surviving on a day-to-day basis, let alone then thinking, oh, wait, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And they still want to go to football class and music class and whatever class they've got after school. It's just so busy. It's difficult to actually kind of like piece it together. But we're always going to be judged as well, right? There's always going to be, oh, well, you could have done this better. You should have done that better. It's like, well, you're not walking in our shoes every day. I get up and I will start my day at 5 a.m. And sometimes my day won't finish until like 9, 10 p.m. And some of that time I'm trying to attribute to the kids, make sure at least I get to spend some time reading to them before they go to bed, or seeing them a little bit in the morning. Sometimes we've just got to accept that we're not superhuman, that we've just got to do what we can do.
Yeah. You know, the other day Nishan just came back from work and he's like, oh, have you done like any tummy time, or has she played today? I was like, I've just been trying to keep her alive and like not crying and just keep her clean. Like, I can't even think about stimulating her or like showing her new toys, because I just have to, I'm just worried about her nappy or her feeding or her nap time. And you're so right, Juggy, sometimes it's so difficult to just take a step back and just try to do the extra bits as a parent, especially when you got two young kids as well. But you know, being a parent is very emotionally draining, but the work you do also requires a lot of emotion. You know, as a doctor, I feel like when I spend my day at the hospital, I give everything to my patients. And sometimes I do bring it back home. I do think about that cancer patient. Did he get his treatment? Will he survive? And these are the things that keep going through my head. And you're very invested in your business. You're very, again, not business, in your purpose. You're very invested in what you do. How do you take a moment to disconnect sometimes? Because you seem to be working with people from all over the world. So it's a 24-hour job. Is it easy to disconnect sometimes, emotionally especially?
Yeah, you know what? I had a message this morning of somebody who had inquired about the service in terms of what we do and how we help people. And then, because I sent a message back, because I could see what the holdup was, and look, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've done so much work on myself, and I've been in your guys' shoes. So I've invested in myself heavily. There's been times where I'm like, I just lacked the self-belief, and it was the self-belief that was stopping me take action. And I had a message of somebody this morning saying, you know what, I can't believe you sent me that message. I don't want to work with you. And I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
Because I sent the message in my own free time, my own personal time, and I sent it from a place of love. I sent a nice message from a place of love to say, come on, let's commit, let's do this, let's make this happen, let's make the changes that you want to see happen in your life. And I just got this completely horrible message come through this morning on WhatsApp, and I was taken aback a bit. And it does impact you. Like anybody that I work with, because you guys become family, it does impact me. Like, it has an emotional impact on me because I care.
Mm.
I care too much sometimes. And this is why you'll probably see me doing all these additional events and additional services and going way, way above and beyond. It's because I just want you guys to have every opportunity to grow and progress and develop and move forwards and be happy. Mm. I just want you all to be so happy. And for me, some of the things that I have to do are quite extreme. Like, I have to give Justy my phone, or I have to give her my laptop. And, you know, nighttime now, so when it gets to 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and I've finished work, I have to give Jussie my phones and my laptop so I don't go back to work, or I don't start messaging and asking people what they're thinking or how they're getting on. And I have to properly disconnect by physically having that action of giving things away so I can't connect.
Mm.
And I know that is quite extreme, but it's one of the things that enables me to get to sleep properly. Like, I do a lot of meditation, I do a lot of journaling, I do a lot of writing, and it really does help. It helps me clear my mind. But yeah, we all struggle with this. I'm not going to say that I'm ever going to be perfect, because I'm always learning, I'm always growing, I'm always evolving too. But yeah, it does have an impact sometimes. But just remember, I think everyone needs to remember, whenever I say something to somebody, I'm saying it for your guys' benefit, and because I've been there, and I've been sitting in your shoes at some point or another.
Mm.
And in fact, I've probably been in a worse place than some of you guys have been. And I want you to all know that whatever you want to achieve, it's possible. But you've got to come and meet me halfway, because my energy is super high, and you've got to come and meet that energy.
Yeah.
Don't be overrun by it. Come and meet it.
Well, Jogi, you've worked with so many different clients over the years, as you said, and you know, you've been doing this for a very long time. But is there one story that stands out for you the most, or a success story that you feel is very close to your heart?
You know what? There's never just one. It depends on the moment, and it depends on the person that I'm speaking to. Because I've seen people go from complete, you know, we've talked about self-loathing and low self-esteem and complete low self-confidence. I've had one client that didn't take his son to like swimming lessons, didn't get himself involved in any single kind of like sporting event with his son. And he dropped about 40 kilos. He reversed type 2 diabetes. His cholesterol levels came into place, triglycerides. His risk of cardiovascular disease just completely dropped. The doctors had no idea what he'd been doing or how he'd done it, and they were all astounded. But it was that moment where he sent me a picture of him and his son swimming on holiday, and he was like, this is what it was all about, like to have these memories with the boys. And I was like, that was such a fulfilling moment for me. And then I've had one client who's more recently, she's had a really poor relationship with nutrition and food in general. And, you know, to the point that she would binge eat quite heavily. She'd eat a lot of food at nighttime, secret eating, never really kind of accepting that there was an issue until, you know, we started talking and breaking that journey down. And through focusing heavily on how did these things make you feel, or how do you feel when you eat, and how do you feel when you take these certain actions, and what are you really escaping from? Like, just having these conversations around what she's doing on a day-to-day basis, she's completely transformed her belief system around nutrition and her belief around her own self-esteem and self-worth.
Mm.
And look, I could go quite deep on that one, but she realized that a lot of what she was doing was actually to make people feel like resistant from that, like pushing other people away through looking a certain way or through eating certain foods. It was helping her stay alone and stay kind of like, I guess, like her words, ugly to everybody else, so that she would never have to open up and be herself. And breaking that journey down, can you imagine how powerful that was when she started to realise where it was all stemming from? And when she started to take control over all these things,
that's like, amazing.
Wow, that was such a powerful moment as a coach to break that down and support her.
So Jackie, it really does, like, you know, it really does seem that what you do, and I think a lot of people need to hear this, that, you know, that going through these physical transformations is so much more than the physical aspect. It has that knock-on effect. And, you know, from the two stories you mentioned, I'm sure there's so many more, but it all just boils down to the truth coming out, and really being honest with yourself, to figure out what's going on. And, you know, you've brought that out in people. And as I said before, Jaggi, you're leaving a legacy behind, and you've created a community where, you know, I had this conversation yesterday with Harbinder, and I said to her, I've spoken to lots of new mums, I've spoken to lots of people, and for them, for some people, an achievement every day is, oh, I've taken a shower. For me, it's like, well, I should be doing that anyway. I should be brushing my teeth. I should be taking care of myself. What's next? What can I do better? I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that everyone has to find the clique of people. And I think we don't spend enough time doing that. Who are the people around us? You know, who are we surrounding ourselves with? And what kind of energy do we have around us? Every morning I wake up and I see a message on the Lean Indian Academy Facebook chat, and it brings me something new. What are other people working towards? What kind of goals are other people trying to achieve? And it's so much more than the physical side of it. And, you know, I said this to Jyoti as well, like, these numbers and stuff, yeah, it's great, they're coming down, but that's bound to happen if I'm doing the right things, and I know that's going to happen. But, you know, the real progress comes to actually being honest with yourself. And Jaggi, what you do to transform people, because it's not an easy thing to sit down and say, actually, this is what's wrong, this is what I'm doing wrong. When I had the first consultation call with you, Jaggi, I remember I was in a really, really dark place, you know, to the extent where Nishant was saying to me, Mila, I'm really worried about you. And Nishant didn't know what to do. He's a GP. I mean, he sees this all the time, but when it's your wife, I guess it's a bit more scary. And, you know, to go through this process of transformation, not just physically, but mentally as well, you know, I think it's something really special you've created, Jaggi, and I can't thank you enough for all the work that you do. And I just want to tell our listeners as well that a lot of the things you do are so selfless as well. You post so much knowledge on Instagram and on your website, and, you know, you don't ask for a penny for any of these things, and it's all from a point of, I just want to do good for other people. So thank you for being you, Jaggi, and I really do appreciate it.
I really, really appreciate that. You know what? There was one word that used to really scare me, and that was legacy. And when I started to accept that into my reality, that I am going to leave a legacy, now I use that with, I feel empowered by that.
Mm.
I feel that it's such a strong word that I can wake up to. In fact, it's one of the words that I've actually written down on. I wouldn't say it's a vision board, because it's literally just drawings that I've done myself. But I wake up to that every single morning. It's the, why do I do what I'm doing right now? And I wake up and I see that word and I thrive off it.
Mm.
So I appreciate the fact that you've used that word like 3 or 4 times in this conversation alone.
Yeah.
And it's something that I really do hope to embody, and I'll continue to strive towards.
Yeah. Well, Jaggi, if anybody wants to follow you or get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I think the best handle is my Instagram, which is at the Indian Body Coach, and my website, which is jaggisidhu.com. And I'm also beginning my own podcast, which will be coming out very soon.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's going to be called From Pain to Purpose.
Oh, wow.
And I'm hoping I'll get you on there at some point.
Jaggi, just give me a break. I've cried enough today.
We'll definitely get you on there, because it would be really, I think, really inspiring to other people that are going through or experiencing what you've experienced in, you know, more recently, and the growth that we've seen you, like, really, really embody over the last kind of, four to five weeks. Mm. We've seen incredible change in you, and not just physically, but these physical changes are actually a byproduct of the things that we do on the psychological or the physiological levels. So, look, I'd be looking forward to having you on
there. No, there's a lot more that I have to say, actually, with these things. And I always talk, you know, Juggy, I always talk about pain. And, you know, I just think it's such a undervalued emotion, such an undervalued feeling. We look at it from a negative point all the time, but pain is what got you here. Grief is what got you here. And hard work is what got you here. None of it was pretty. A lot of it was ugly. And I think we need to celebrate that a lot more. We celebrate too much of the nice things we see on social media. And actually, like, I'm actually just fed up of that. Like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it anymore. I want to know the real stuff.
You said, yeah, I think you said something in a post recently about it all being like this kind of like positivity movement.
Yeah.
It being like this soft porn that we see on Instagram, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. Like, for me right now, what you've just said there is really, really powerful, because when I experience the most anxiety and pain now, I realize that it's an opportunity for growth and I'm going to evolve. So every time I come up against something that I feel uncomfortable with, I celebrate it as a moment, like, whatever is going to come out of the back of this, something incredible is going to happen, because that's happened time and time and time again in my life. So I actually look for pain now, whereas I used to avoid it, right?
Yeah.
I used to, like you said earlier in this conversation, Netflix and TV and rubbish. Yeah. No, I'm seeking pain because that's where I'm going to grow. Mm. That's where I'm going to be more. And essentially, if I can evolve, I can give more back to you guys.
Mm.
I can help you guys grow and develop and change. So I'm constantly thinking, well, how do we pass it on? And if we can change our mindset towards what we learn on a day-to-day basis, instead of holding it close to us, think about how we can use that to help other people grow and progress. And I think that's where that virtuous cycle comes from. And I think that's why I do what I do. And like you said, selflessly, I didn't get a single penny for what I post on Instagram, but I'm hoping just one post will change somebody's life that day.
Yeah.
And if it does, then incredible.
Yeah.
But again, I've probably waffled off.
No, Juggy, I think we could talk forever, really. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what I can what I can do in the next few weeks and next few months with the help of your team. And I really want to have you back on, Juggy, because I'm sure that in 6 months' time, you're going to be a different man. I can just see you changing all the time, and it would be really nice to have you back. So thank you for your time, Juggy. I know you're very busy and we've gone off time as well. So we'll leave it at that and hope to have you back on soon.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right,
thank you, Juggy. Okay, Juggy.